I know that the good Lord's been there all the time. I'll just put it to you like that. The good Lord's been there all the time.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn. I'm speaking In Good Faith today with Dr. Jason E. Shelton. He's a full professor of sociology and director of the Center for African American Studies at the University of Texas at Arlington. Dr. Shelton's research interests concern the sociology of religion. He's written two books, the first one, Blacks and Whites in Christian America, How Racial Discrimination Shapes Religious Convictions, and then a new book that caught our eye that we wanted to talk about today, The Contemporary Black Church, The New Dynamics of African American Religion. I can't help but notice you're representing, you've got your UTA polo yes, on there.
I do. And it says Center for African American Studies underneath as well. Yes, sir.
Awesome. We'll give the man a raise for representing the university here. So this is something that's been being discussed a lot in religious circles, the rise of the nuns, and hemorrhaging is the word we hear about believers from, not necessarily from their faith, but at least from organized denominations.
Yes.
So this makes sense that you would say, well, how is this happening in the Black church in America compared with overall?
It's a similar story to what we've heard nationally, somewhat different. The data is very clear that whites began departing from organized religion really in the early 1970s, by the mid-70s for certain. For African Americans, we didn't start departing until the late 1990s. Mm. And my book is the first to really show that, because what I do is I analyze data from the General Social Survey, which is one of the gold standards in American survey research. I wanted to look specifically among African Americans. There's always been this trope in American society that African Americans are hyper-religious. And it's true, we are very religious people, but we were not exempt from these larger trends. And I came up in the African American Methodist tradition, and I knew just by looking around my congregation and knowing the kids that I grew up with who had left the church, okay, our story's not being told here, and how does that reflect in the broader data? So I grabbed the General Social Survey, and I started running some data, and that ultimately is what this book has become, is telling the Black version of this story. And it's really an important story because, as I argue in the book, all these changes that we see, not just in America overall with organized religion, but specifically within the African-American community are really important changes for us because of our history in this country and the role that the church has played in bringing about social change and driving social movements for change.
Yeah.
And so that's where organized religion has been so critical to Black America over centuries for political and social investment, for the sense of community. And the church has been essentially that one institution in Black America's history that African Americans could rely on. And what does it mean now that it's declining? So those were all some of the things that helped to inspire me for this book.
You have some interesting stories, some of them just a sentence or two, but they're really quite revealing. You talk about for the decades when going to church and taking pride in dressing up and showing up, that there was a place where in this building, in this service, I have dignity and yes, can take pride in who I am. But that some of that has changed. Those same gentlemen may now be at a football game together and taking pride in their team, but their team is not necessarily building them spiritually or building right, community. So it's not just an academic issue, it seems. Also, because you're a church goer,
yep,
this seems to reach your heart too as well. Will you talk about that?
Oh, yeah. My cousin Michael and I are kids from the 1990s. We grew up with hip hop and we grew up with mainstream American culture on television and in our earphones and headphones. And like a lot of kids who came up in hip hop in the 1990s, we learned a lot about Islam. And Michael flirted with Islam for a long time. And for grandma, like that was like a big deal.
Yeah.
She came up in the segregated South and the church was her institution. And for her and grandpa and just about everybody else of their generation, the church was the one place where they could call their own, where all the outside world could be filled with racism and discrimination and a lack of opportunity. But inside those four walls, there was a sense of purpose and integrity and character. And yes, we dress up here. And yes, this is our space. But as the time would march on, it would become African Americans would make more and more progress And grandma would experience that progress herself in leaving the segregated South and moving to Cleveland, Ohio, and becoming a lead nurse at a major hospital. And like, she would have never thought that. And my grandpa would become the first president of the local steelworkers association in Cleveland. And no one would have ever thought that. And they would get more opportunities in the North. And religion would remain a key piece of their lives, for the arc of their lives. But for their grandchildren, it would become much more optional. And that's where we are today. And it's like the success of the civil rights movement created more options for us. But the success of that civil rights movement, the challenges in the middle of all of that, no one would ever have imagined, fast forwarding the clock 50 years later, that the more opportunities that African Americans sought after, the more options to live our lives, one of them would become church, is optional too. That is definitely not something that folks could have imagined. But on a personal level, yeah, that's one of those stories at the kitchen table. Another story was just for my wife and I, trying to find a church here once we moved to the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And coming up in the African American Methodist tradition, there are three traditions that comprise the historic Black church. The Black Methodist tradition was the first one that was officially established, the African Methodist Episcopal Church, the AME Church. And that's the one that I grew up in. But it's the broader Black Methodist tradition. The Baptist tradition is where most African Americans have been a part of. And even to today, most Black folks are Baptists. And then there's the Holiness Pentecostal tradition. Those are the three that are in the history of the Black church that essentially comprise it. While the nuns have increased so much and the Black Methodist tradition and Baptist tradition has fallen, as we know, the non-denominational Protestant tradition has grown dramatically. And these are the most well-to-do African Americans. The Black Methodist tradition I grew up in used to be viewed as the Black bourgeoisie. Mm. We have nothing on those Black non-denominational Protestants. They're better educated, far more income, more likely to live in the suburbs. Not only that, far more likely to vote for Republican presidential candidates, whereas, of course, the Baptists and the Methodists are far more likely to vote for Democratic candidates. So what we see is the fastest growing denomination within the Black church is very much so a part of mainstream American society.
And is there more integration in congregations? Because that's another way of...
Oh, yeah. Black non-denominational Protestants, they don't feel like... there's a same kind of distance between them and white America the way that there is for members of those historic denominations. Mm. There's a story in there in terms of diversity among us as Black folks within the faith. But when my wife and I got here to Dallas-Fort Worth and we're ready to find a church and we're ready to have our girls baptized, we had a hard time finding a Black Methodist church that had young families where we felt like we could really build community and find that camaraderie that we're used to on Sunday. And here we are in Dallas-Fort Worth. We're like, wait a minute, why is this so hard in DFW? Really? This is one of the largest metropolitan areas in all of the U.S. And of course, we did find a church, but it was a challenge to find that church. We chose a smaller, growing Black Methodist church, but we didn't want the mega church. We tried a few of them. We were like, no, it's too big. It's not enough community. It's not enough of an attachment. Don't get me wrong. I know people who go to those churches and have found the community that they were looking for, but we also wanted to stick in the Black Methodist tradition. So it was a sacrifice to do that. And the church that we go to right now is about 25 minutes away in the South Dallas suburbs, in an area where it's a strong African-American middle-class population. And so what we found was that we had to make that sacrifice to drive a little bit. That church wasn't down the street.
Yeah.
And so again, that's part of the inspiration for me to write the book, because I'm realizing, wait, in the denominational tradition that I grew up in, the first one established in all of the history of Black America, I'm having a difficult time finding a congregation here for our family. And so that's part of the story too. That's not in the book, but that's part of that inspiration along the way.
You make a really great point in the book about not thinking of Black Christians as a monolith, that you've just mentioned several different denominations, including a very small smattering of Black Catholics even. But have the different denominations been affected differently?
Oh, yeah. Great question, Steve. So the answer to your question is yes. And I think that there's a lot of research on the Black church historically, right? You hear that term, the Black church.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of books that are out there on the Black church. What I always wanted to figure out, though, is that I remember as a kid in Los Angeles, Ohio is home, but as a kid, I grew up in L.A. And I remember my parents going to a Black Methodist church called Holman United Methodist Church. And then they switched and went to a church called West Angeles Church of God in Christ, which is one of the big churches in LA even today. It's a Pentecostal church. But both of these churches had in common is they were predominantly African-American and they were in predominantly Black neighborhoods. But when you were inside the walls of those churches, they were very different. I heard folks speaking in tongues in West Angeles, and I remember asking my mom, what's going on here? What language is she speaking? And my mom just laughed and chuckled at my brother and I, like, what is, she's like, baby, you'll figure it out one day. But I could tell early on, just in those two congregations, that these were Black people, but they were thinking about and practicing faith in very different ways. And as you fast forward the clock 25 years later and I become a professor and I'm realizing there's all this research out there on the Black church, but it didn't tell the story of diversity inside the church. It didn't tell the story of breaking the Black church down to the individual parts that make up that sum to see what is the Black Methodist tradition and what are its driving parts and what is the Black Baptist tradition. And not only that, but what does it mean in today's world with the decline of organized religion, and are some traditions affected more or less by this? And the answer to that question is yes. For example, the Black Methodist tradition that I've grown up in has always been small, but it is much smaller now. It went from the early 1970s, about 16% of the Black population, now to down to 5% of the Black population. That's a significant decline. The Black Baptist tradition has always been pretty large, as I said a few minutes ago, but it went from like 70% down to 48% now. So these are pretty significant numbers of Black folks that are leaving. If you talk to Black pastors in the Baptist tradition, they know it, and ladies see it. But at the same time, that Black Catholic tradition that you mentioned, it's always been small, about 6% of the Black population, but they've held their numbers pretty much. The Black Pentecostal tradition, always been small, but they've pretty much held their numbers. What I came to realize is that same mainline versus evangelical dynamic that we see in the broader American population, it plays out right inside the Black church. And there are winners and losers in terms of the denominations right there. So yeah, it's been a fascinating story that has not been told. But what I also argue, it's much more consequential for us as African Americans because of our history and because the church has been so critical to social progress and advancement and that sense of community for African Americans.
You know, what a lot of people think of the Black church, immediately they're thinking Ebenezer Baptist or some similar flavor. You talk not just about people deciding to leave organized religion, but even your chapter 5, Are All Sins Created Equal? It's really fascinating just the way you sort of break it down, because it's also fracturing within a denomination of we may be more conservative or more liberal. So divisions within the fading numbers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no question about it. And I think we see this on display within the broader United Methodist tradition in terms of its fracturing, to use your word, which I think is very accurate. I think that's one of the great stories here is we've seen this within American Christianity overall, sort of the extent to which whether a sin is a sin. And you see that play out very clearly among the people that I talk to, that it's not that the mainliners don't believe that things are sins. It's that they're just going to contextualize why people do what they do. And here's where you're getting to the hot button issues of homosexuality. Here's where you're getting to the hot button issues of abortion and the role of a woman's place in the home. And again, it goes back to that idea that Black folks are hyper-religious people. That's always been the trope in American society. But when you dig a lot deeper and you break it down and you look at denominational affiliations, there's a clear and very rich diversity within Black America that's playing out right now on kitchen tables and in family reunions and in barbershops and beauty shops that just say there's systematic diversity among us. And so people look at us and they say, as I was as a little kid, and say, oh, it's a lot of Black people in that church. But then you realize, wait a minute, there's a lot of systematic variation that's structured there in pattern. And it's not random in ways that a lot of people might think.
This is In Good Faith. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Stephen Cap Perry, host of In Good Faith. We have another podcast in our BYU Radio family of podcasts. It's called The Appleseed. It's a way to take a journey anytime you would like with stories. Nationally known storytellers telling everything from folktales and fairy tales, personal stories and family tales. It's a great way to get everybody laughing or thinking about some particular topic.
And it almost always leads to conversations in the family. If you hit pause after a story and say, what did you think about that? And boy, what does that remind you of? That is a fun time to get to share each other's stories. And that's what The Appleseed does. Check out the podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to In Good Faith. I'm wondering, you grew up in the church, but were you a believer? And how has the change in the church affected your own worship or sense of community? You've talked about moving and trying to even find your denomination.
So, I mean, as a kid, and I don't mind sharing this, as a kid, I went to church because mom and dad said, hey, it's time to go to church, boys.
Yeah.
And so you're pulled along and you go. And of course, I always believed in the sense that family always going to say that the good Lord is going to take care of you. We got to go to church and pay our respects to the good Lord and honor God. And we did that. But let me also be clear and say, my parents didn't go every Sunday. My parents they weren't new to the middle class. And that's part of an experience that my family has had, is that I had grandparents who were college graduates decades ago. So the idea of going to college, making it to the middle class, it was kind of already expected to us that you're going to do some of these things. So my parents had careers where they couldn't go to church every Sunday as kids in California. And we would sit in and play video games and watch Arnold Schwarzenegger movies and be happy doing it, right? And because, again, we were of that mainline Black Methodist tradition that says, hey, look, you can't make it today because my dad's got a report to write or my mom's got this to do. And so we're going to go next Sunday. And I can't say that I'm any different from that, because my wife and I have crazy jobs. And yeah, there are going to be a number of Sundays that it's like, you know what, we ain't going to make it this weekend, girls. And the girls are like, great, daddy, we'll go next Sunday, right? So we are definitely churchgoers, but really that mainline issue of how you navigate the broader American society. And I think that's something that's also pretty interesting for us as African Americans. So the broader arguments about religion in America have always revolved around things like modernization and secularization. And those are two terms that really haven't affected Black America very much. Again, there's that trope that we're hyper-religious, so we're not very secular. And then there's that idea of the modern world. When you're a group like we are as African Americans that has experienced such a long history of inequality and disparity and discrimination, you don't get access to the same kinds of access to the modern world, the modern mainstream society. So that's one layer of arguments about religion and secularization. But then there's another layer, I think, that relates specifically to African Americans, and that's in sociology. And there's that word assimilation. And in sociology, an argument is also been that African Americans have experienced such a strong and persistent racial discrimination that there's no way that we could assimilate. We haven't gotten the access to the mainstream society or opportunities. My point here, Steve, is that's changing. And the data is very clear that's changing as more and more middle-class African-Americans who got careers and jobs and have homes in the suburbs, now they're negotiating religion in different ways. Now they have more options in different ways. So I think what we're beginning to see, Steve, is that more and more Black folks are making it to the middle class, and they are becoming having more access to modern society. And now they are grappling with the secular world. And now you're seeing the two big waves crash. And that's the wave of modernization and secularization and the wave of the middle class and assimilation. And I think that's where you're seeing a whole lot with religion and politics for Black Americans these days in ways that you haven't even seen for whites the same way, because it's all crashing together at the same time with the march of modernity and the flow of assimilation.
And in a much shorter time span.
Yes, precisely, a much shorter time span.
So even to adjust to the pace of change. So it sounds like you're talking about, as people got more opportunity or get more opportunity and opportunities for higher education or different kinds of jobs, that even that stratification can pull apart because people move.
Oh, yes. No question about it. And so, like you mentioned earlier about my own personal walk in life, having to find a new church, having to find a new home, and all that comes with that and that sense of community.
You started by talking about your grandma, and you actually end the book talking about being at her funeral. So here's someone who really lived the civil rights movement.
Yes.
And so now you're a generation who knows the people who were there, but you came later.
Yes.
And I guess a tradition can't help but change. But you talk about being there, resisting, joining in the post-funeral conversations about Black Lives Matter and what about this political issue and all of this. What were you thinking as you stood there and were hearing these later generations having just said goodbye to the civil rights generation, if I can call your grandma that?
Yeah, oh, grandma is definitely that. I think Black America is at a major tipping point. Generational divides have kicked in some very significant ways. I had the privilege, Steve, of having all four of my grandparents until I was 28 years old. It's just amazing. I know very few people who've had that luxury. I got to know them all so well. And they all had some sort of, with the exception of one, my mother's mother had all roots in the Deep South. My grandma Margie's side had left the Deep South before that and were already living in Detroit and already going to racially integrated schools in Michigan. So Grandma Margie's walk in life was even different than that of my Grandma Elizabeth Shelton's walk in life. Two young Black women, one in the North, one in the South, and very different upbringing and very different American experiences or African-American experiences for their day. But I guess what I just realized is that you go to the funeral, you experience all of this, and then you're witnessing the passing of a generation. And my daughters, for example, I've got two daughters, a 13-year-old and a 15-year-old. They know our family history, and they knew Grandma Shelton before she died, but she's the only one that they knew. And so the idea is that those anchors are gone. Mm. And those were the anchors in Black America that when Black History Month comes around, or when you're sitting around the kitchen table and you need to hear those stories about discrimination, or those stories of trial and tribulation, or those stories that connect you to the broader narrative, your own family and those people, that your own family, those people are gone. So these young African Americans in today's world don't know that narrative. They don't have a personal connection to segregation the same way. And their parents might tell a lot of those stories, but they can't do it the same way because they didn't live through it. Now, maybe those are the good days, right? America has come a long way. That we have definitely, as grandma would always say, we've come a long way, but we got a long way to go. Mm. So definitely those are good stories to know, the positive stories about the hospital and the great things that would happen for her. But at the same time, those cultural anchors are gone. So here I was at the funeral. Wow, I'm realizing she's the last one. Like, grandma was the last of the four grandparents. How do I move on, knowing that those four anchors that were there, love my mom and dad to death, no question. They're both still with me. I don't want them going anywhere, but they weren't their own parents. And even they will say that. And so how do you move on without them? And I think those are sort of those issues to grapple with, not just individually, but as anchors in a culture, anchors in an experience in America that's your connection to the motivation in life. So my grandparents would always say, hey, look, boy, you got it easy. Go out there because you didn't have to deal with what we had to deal with, right? You got far more opportunity out there. So go out there and go and do that and make us all proud. And those are those, that sort of motivation, that inspiration of hearing them tell their stories that would inspire us to go out and make our dreams come true.
You quote frequently from just a whole bunch of different reverends and pastors and other religious leaders within the church in the book, which gives it a really nice flavor because I'm hearing from different perspectives. Did you hear something in their words and their stories that they still had hope while they watch the decline in numbers?
So in the end, Steve, I have to be honest and say that the data speaks very loudly about change happening in Black America. And again, the change is so strong. For example, you look at African-Americans who are age 25 and younger. So just a very small group, people between ages of 18 and 25. And looking at their religious affiliations and the trends in religion, only like 2% of them say that they affiliate with the African-American Methodist tradition. We're in a lot of trouble. And not only that, the Black religious non-affiliates, the nuns that you mentioned, are now the largest denomination, the largest religious tradition among that small cohort of people who are between ages of 18 and 25. What gives me some hope, though, is that despite all the pessimistic numbers, is that people still look for community. And so when I talk to the atheists and I talk to the agnostics in my book, they're still saying that we need a gathering place. We need something to bring people together because otherwise we're just going to be running around out here on our own individual islands. And what they're trying to do is establish that. And that's the one thing that does give me hope, is that my ultimate fear, regardless of my sense of faith, put that aside because I'm a nerdy professor and I've got to listen to the data and represent the data. But what I also want is for people to have community. Mm-hmm. I don't like the idea of people being islands on their own. My wife and kids and I will go out to eat at a restaurant. Steve, I know you see this too. And people got their cell phones at the table next to you and they're not talking at all, but they're just on their cell phone. Like, how do we break that? How do we get back to a sense of community in some way? And religion is the best way to bring about a lot of that community. For African Americans, the Black church has shown that's the case. The Black church is essentially the main institution that reaches out to all these other smaller institutions that connect African Americans, regardless of our denomination, regardless of whether you're middle class or poor, regardless of what you do for a living, regardless of how much education you have. The church has been that vein. As the church declines, what replaces that? And that's where I think the information for African Americans is so critical. But in the end, we're talking about community. And even if the atheists and agnostics are looking for community, that's at least some kind of connection among people that at least gives me hope for the future.
Mm. Because our title is In Good Faith, and we listen to how people see God working in their lives in different ways. I'm wondering, what do you know now spiritually or about God that you didn't know when you were a kid growing up?
That's a good question, Steve. What do I know now? Let's just say I know that the good Lord's been there all the time. I'll just put it to you like that. The good Lord's been there all the time. Steve, if you would have told me this had been my life, that I would, man, Steve, now you're going to catch me as not Dr. Jason Shelton, but as the homeboy Lil Jay that all my friends know. And they would say, Little Jay, we knew you were going to be all right in life. Who would have known? Steve, I went to graduate school. I didn't do any research on religion. I was writing on religion and politics and the growth of the African-American middle class. I built a career studying religion, right? You just never know. But as grandma would say, baby, hang in there and keep going because the good Lord is going to do good work. And that's what's happened in my life. And so that's what I would say, Steve, is that I didn't know then. I still don't know. But I'm still walking that path because my family always said, stay on that path, keep your rear end in church, and keep your prayers going, and let the good Lord do good work. And that's exactly what's happened. That's what I didn't know then, and that's what I definitely know now.
This episode was produced by Heather Bigley. Our production team also includes Aaliyah Ebert, Katarina Martinich, and James Sturdivant. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen, Ashton Parkinson, and Lauren Sandberg. Spread the word about In Good Faith by leaving a comment and subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. We think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. Find us on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. Our YouTube page is youtube.com/@in-good-faith. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you join us again soon, right here in Good Faith.